Hello, it is 12:54 a.m. and this is RPT coming to you, not necessarily so live, but we are right outside of city limits of St. Louis, somewhere along Interstate 70 West, headed back towards Columbia after Mizzou's 52-42 win over Illinois to start the season. We're coming to you to bring good, bad, and indifferent, because being the bad blogger I am, I don't exactly feel like firing up the laptop whenever I get back to my apartment at about 2 this morning on a beautiful Sunday morning, no less. But so we're going with the audio version of Good, Bad, and Indifferent. I'm joined by Uribe Auction to give us some thoughts. Not to mention, you can look forward to later today, I'm assuming, considering it is now officially Sunday, the Rock M Nation post-game podcast recorded about an hour ago. Forgive me, it's late or early, depending on how you look at it. But yeah, good, bad, and indifferent on Mizzou's 52-42 win over Illinois. We'll start with the man everybody's looking at, and that's the quarterback position. Uribe, Chase Daniel, good, bad, indifferent. How you feel?
It's funny because my initial feeling was indifferent, but then I looked at his line, and he had, I think, 323 yards of passing and 3 touchdowns. RPT and I were commenting earlier in the game that it looked like he was telegraphing a lot of his throws. Like, he was playing like I play NCAA 09, where he picked out a receiver he was going to throw to, and he threw to that receiver no matter what. So there are a number of routes where, you know, he would throw the ball up to Jared Perry, you know, to say that, and, you know, Vontae Davis was all over Perry and the pass would be incomplete. And I think a lot of that had to do with Daniels. I think it was 26 for 43 on the day. Forgive me, it's late again.
Not only is it late, but we have no internet as we sit in my Volvo somewhere on Interstate 70.
Hey, there's a White Castle. Boy, we'll like that. Basically, I would have to put Daniel in the end. I think he goes in the good. You know, my initial feeling was that it was indifferent, but when I look at his line and I look at what he did, I think the overall expectations for Daniel coming into the game were just through the roof. And we kind of needed a game like this to really come back down to earth and realize that, hey, you know, 26 for 43, 323 yards, 1 interception, 3 touchdowns, that's a good game for Chase Daniel, no matter who they're playing.
Yeah, early in the game, I was very much on the indifferent boat. I commented early in the game that I thought that was as shaky as I'd seen Chase look since 2006 back in Lincoln. And, you know, that's never something a Mizzou fan wants to hear. He ends up being in the good just by virtue of being Chase Daniel, of getting everything together, just an absolutely huge second quarter, and then you know, big response in the third with the play action touchdown pass to Tommy Saunders right off the change of possession. Daniel was not outstanding, but like Uribe said, expectations for Chase Daniel are through the roof. I'm not sure he met them, but he did qualify in the good. But early in the game, there was just a lot of questions. Like he said, he was determining before the play even started who he was going to go to. You know, he just just laying out the screen pass perfectly. I don't want to blame him too much. That was very, very well read by the Illinois defense. But Chase Daniel, we'll put him in the good. But certainly there were moments of indifference, you know, just kind of littered throughout the game there from Chase Daniel. We move on to one of the highlights, I think most people will agree for the Missouri offense, and that was Derek Washington and Jimmy Jackson. Uribe, thoughts?
Yeah, I came away floored by Derek Washington and Jimmy Jackson, but mainly Derek Washington. The way he was hitting his holes and not going down when he got initially hit by the Illinois defensive line, that was really great to see. I mean, as much as people worried about Tony Temple not being with the team this year, I think all those fears were alleviated by Derek Washington and Jimmy Jackson's performance. That was awful. I mean, if they can do that, then, you know, fine. Let teams go ahead and stop the pass. I think Missouri's offense will be fine if we stick to the running game with Washington and Jackson.
Absolutely, and you bring up the whole Tony Temple scenario. You know, I was never concerned about it. This duo, I think, is as good as it gets for Missouri, at least unless you buy into the Ronnie Wingo hype. But that's a story for another day, and that's a Power Mizzou discussion board waiting to happen. But unquestionably Derek Washington, Jimmy Jackson filed under the good category. If we had a, if this was great, bad, and indifferent, we'd be putting them up in great. Derek Washington, we were discussing with GHTD on the phone earlier in the night. Derek Washington is possibly the most perfect type of back in the Missouri offense. You know, great hands, very versatile, but is able to generate his own steam when he needs to, doesn't need that lead blocker, is able to just kind of follow the zone blocking scheme ahead of him, create his own hole if necessary. And how many tackles did we see him break tonight?
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot.
I mean, after so many years of seeing Tony Temple see things kind of close up inside, try to bounce it outside and bounce off a couple guys as he goes out of bounds for another six-yard gain, you're seeing Washington get some tough yards, bouncing off guys, spinning off guys, really something to be impressed with for Washington. We move on to the Missouri pass catchers. Lots to talk about there. Obviously, so many guys to talk about. We'll include receivers and the tight ends in this one. Uribe, first thoughts.
Might as well start off with Tommy Saunders. He had the biggest game. However, you know, he probably goes in the indifferent just because he was so inconsistent in the first half of the game. I mean, he had some of those balls where he had drops. He had the fumble. I mean, he didn't look like his head was all there in the first half. Second half, he definitely got it together and played well. But, I mean, first half was bad, second half was good, so I guess that averages out to indifferent.
And then my thoughts on Saunders. With Saunders, when people ask questions about this Missouri receiving core, Saunders to me is Mr. Reliable. He's nothing spectacular, but he is exactly the type of player that every receiving core needs to have. Just reliable guy, good hands, you know, runs good routes, you know, and just every single time you need him, he's there for the six-yard hook. But Mr. Reliable was not there in the first half, for a lot of the first half at least, until, you know, Missouri started getting on a roll in the second quarter. You know, there was the drop, there was the fumble. As soon as he caught that ball, I turned and said, secure the ball, and not less than a second and a half later, that ball's on the ground and momentum's shifting. Well, next on the list, we'll go to Jared Perry. Your eBay auction thoughts on Jared Perry?
Like RPT said after the game, we saw some of the freshman Jared Perry and we saw some of the sophomore Jared Perry today. He had a route earlier in the game where I think it was about 27 yards on a third down. It was a really big play. He ran it well, but then there are some players where he looked like he didn't have a good feel for where the sideline was. He didn't, run his route perfectly. Of course, this is me, someone who's never played the wide receiver position nor organized football in his life, trying to say that. Overall for Perry, I'd probably have to give him an indifferent, but that's an indifferent for me just personally that leans more to the good side. RPT might have something else to say about that.
You know, again, I'm very torn between good and indifferent just because there were two very different Jared Perrys out there. There was the Jared Perry that could find his space in the zone on the seam route, on the post route, you know, not only make the catch, but turn up field, make some plays, make guys miss. Then there's the Jared Perry that can't hold on to the football on a crossing route. There's a Jared Perry that can't break free of a defender. Of course, you know, no more Aqib Talib to burn. Vontae Davis is the weapon of choice tonight. But now we move on. We move on to the cheat code, number 9, Jeremy Maclin. Both at receiving, returning. Thoughts on Jeremy Maclin, who we're told is just a sprained left ankle. But Uribe auction thoughts, Jeremy Maclin.
No question, he goes in the good, and it's because Illinois was so concerned with the threat of Jeremy Maclin. I'm not sure what his receiving line. All right, you probably want to slow down a bit. I'm not so sure what his receiving line was for the game, but the threat of him there really opened things up for Tommy Saunders, for Jared Perry, for Chase Kaufman. I mean, they lined him up in the slot. They threw a couple of balls to him over the top. They didn't really work out. But overall, on the offensive side of the ball, it was just the threat of Jeremy Maclin being out there that really opened the offense up. Of course, special teams, he had the 99-yard kick return. He had the 45-yard punt return, which looked like it was going to go back for a touchdown. I mean, again, the threat of Jeremy Maclin on special teams forced Illinois to kick the ball away from him and give Missouri good field position on a lot of their drives. RPT?
You know what? I really got nothing outside of that. I mean, you know, write Jeremy Maclin in the good in Sharpie. The biggest question now is what to do with him. How healthy is he? Is this something that's going to nag him as the season goes on? You know, I think the general consensus is, you know, give him a red jersey. Let him, you know, be best buddies with Denario Alexander. Let him sit and get healthy. You know, this team doesn't necessarily need Jeremy Maclin or Denario Alexander until they travel to Lincoln. Get them healthy. They don't need to see many snaps against SEMO. They don't need to see many snaps against Nevada. They don't need to see many against Buffalo. So we move on to arguably one of the best highlights for the night of any Rock'em Nation reader. And that would be Mr. Chase Y-Button thrust the nunchuck upward Kaufman. Uribe.
Well, when Chase had that player, he had the hurdle, he caught the ball, and I saw him going downfield, and I saw the Illinois defender coming at him, and I just kind of stated, he's going to hurdle. And within about a second, he was leaping over Illinois' defender. And I mean, the crowd's reaction to that was great. When they showed the replay of it, and he, you know, the whole crowd just goes, oh, man, you know, those plays are just so fun to watch, even though they hardly work. I think that's only the second time I've seen that play work. You know, that and the play in Colorado last year. Overall, I would have to give Chase Kaufman a good. You know, he wasn't spectacular. He had the play that really did set him in the good was the first touchdown that Chase threw to him, where he put the ball up before Chase Kaufman had even made his cut to the end zone. And that's just trusting in your receiver's routes, like RVT was saying during the game. I mean, Chase Kaufman runs his routes so well, and he just does everything incredibly well for a tight end that he's got to go into good for this game.
That's the beauty of Chase Kaufman, is just the familiarity in this program. I mean, how long ago does it seem whenever Chase Kaufman was catching one of the touchdown passes to spur the comeback in the Independence Bowl against South Carolina? I mean, if you look at guys that have spanned their entire careers with this entire reemergence of Missouri football, just think of how much Chase Kaufman has contributed in 3 years and now going into his fourth year. Chase Kaufman goes into the good. He does what Chase Kaufman does, which is eat up yards, be a security blanket for Chase Daniel when other people are being taken away, and then, of course, giving us, you know, the highlight that we're all looking for. So the Xbox tradition of Rock'em Nation continues as we go from the cheat code into the Y button back-to-back right there. But one thing, it did make us miss Martin Rucker a little bit. There were several times Kaufman makes the catch. You know, he's about 1 or 2 yards shy. And he's fighting, but he's staying in place as he's fighting 3 or 4 guys. Whereas our beloved T. Rucker just dragging guys across, you know, first down markers just as a career at the University of Missouri. But never hurting it, tight end. But outside of that, any other receivers, you know, there were a lot of hype. You know, Jarrell Jackson, what would he do? If you came into this game looking to see what we could get out of the freshman receivers, you went home disappointed.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, from the only freshman who seemed to have a big impact on offense was Andrew Jones. He got a couple of balls. I mean, he doesn't go into good. He would probably go into different. Wasn't bad, of course. Michael Agnew got a few snaps on offense, but of course didn't make much of an impact. You know, it didn't seem like they really needed the freshman receivers today, though. It looked like they were content throwing the ball to Perry, throwing the ball to Saunders, throwing the ball to Kaufman, and throwing the ball to Maclin. And, you know, as we go into these next few games, the freshmen are going to need to see a few snaps. As, you know, we're not going to have Denario, we're not going to have Maclin. Hopefully, I mean, I would have to assume we're not going to have either of those. And it'll be big, you know, it'll be good to get them some experience against the SEMOs, the Nevadas, the Buffaloes. So if we do need them in Big 12 conference play, they won't be totally shell-shocked by, you know, the flow of college football.
And what's convenient is that these guys will see their snaps at home against an opponent they should feel comfortable against after being able to see a team as good as Illinois and get that whole wide-eyed experience of, you know, what was a bowl atmosphere. And that's something I want to file under the good tonight. You know, as we stop talking about the players for a second. Last 2 years, we have been up in the rafters of the Edward Jones Dome. We have been writing our names on the ceiling. And last year, we left the dome thinking, wow, how quiet was that? And very concerned about the crowd noise in general. Got back, watched the film last year of the Mizzou-Illinois game, watched the broadcast, and man, it sounded loud on the field. This year, up in the rafters, there was some noise up there, which makes me that much more anxious to speed back to Columbia and see what it sounded like on ESPN. Thoughts on the crowd, Uribe?
Oh yeah, there's no question. I mean, the moment that really defined it for me was when Illinois had just thrown another one of those, you know, post routes or whatever they were running that was burning our defense. They had the ball in the 20, and they called a timeout. And Missouri's crowd, they got up and they started cheering. You know, that place was rocking at that point. Tommy Chavis came in, got the sack, dropped Juice Williams back to about the 30. Then he threw the interception to Sean Weatherspoon. And I mean, that you could just feel the energy had just re-entered the building from the Missouri crowd. It got loud, and you know, there are a number of points in the game where it got like that, but there was never a point in the game outside of, you know, before Spoon's interception where it got that loud. And overall, I was really, really pleased with the crowd. I think it was about 66,000.
Yeah, 66K plus
there. And you know, what do you think the split was on the crowd today?
Split, probably, you know, looking at the parking lot, pretty much all you saw was gold. But I think once you got inside, you're probably looking at about 55-45 in favor of Missouri.
Yeah. But the Missouri fans, they, you know, maybe it was because I was just sitting on that side, but they seemed a lot more vocal than the Illini fans, who were probably looking forward to basketball season.
Absolutely. Well, getting back to product on the field, we should say, offensive line, probably the biggest question, not called Jake Harry going into this season. Offensive line, I'm going to go ahead and say it, I was impressed. Yeah. Uribe, thoughts?
I totally agree. I mean, going into the year, you had to be worried about Tim Barnes and Elvis Fisher, guys who didn't have a whole lot of experience. And, you know, like the boy was saying after the game in the dark parking lot, they passed the test. They passed the test against a very good Illinois defensive front. You know, Illinois was throwing a lot of different blitz packages. It looked like at Chase Daniel. Of course, not as much as we were throwing at Juice Williams. But they passed the test, and they protected Chase. They let him do his job. And, you know, they're not going to see a better defensive front probably until the Texas game. So, I have to file them in good. And, you know, Tim Barnes was the guy I was worried about. He didn't have that bad of a game. And, you know, if I recall, you know, I love Adam Speaker, but Tim Barnes didn't have a whole lot of bad snaps like Adam Speaker had in the game last year. But, yeah, I'm kind of rambling. It's also 1-11 right now. But, yeah, they go into good.
Offensive line, again, just a huge question going into this year. You know, a lot of people concerned about Elvis Fisher protecting Chase's blind side. Really, the only problems Chase ran into is, you know, problems that Chase ran into himself. Scrambling out of the pocket, getting happy feet. A lot of that had to do with outstanding coverage from Illinois. We need to hand it to the Illinois secondary, even though Chase puts up big numbers. Vontae Davis in coverage, if you've never seen Illinois in person, it's something to behold. You know, last year, I was in the game, I was at the game in Norman against Oklahoma, and I had not seen team speed sideline to sideline like that. Vontae Davis on a receiver in man coverage is just as impressive as seeing that Oklahoma defense sideline to sideline. The offensive line definitely files under good. You know, the zone blocking schemes were wonderful for Derek Washington. That has a lot to do with the day that Derek Washington had. I was concerned about Tim Barnes. This is a very, very stout Illinois front four. I was concerned about Barnes quarterbacking the line, calling protections, and, you know, as far as we could tell, fairly flawless.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah.
So we go across the Missouri offense, pretty much no bads, but we're going to flip sides of the ball where it is not the same story on the drive home tonight. Missouri defense giving up 42 points. I guess not 42 considering Chase Daniel gifting one and early in the first half on this intercepted screen pass. But
also, you could discount the the last second touchdown play that, you know, Juice Williams throws the touchdown pass, you know, whatever. Who, I'm not sure anyone is really going at it on that play. But if you want to start off, just start with the defensive line. You might as well start off with them because they're good. I was personally blown away by Tommy Chavis and Stryker Schulock today. The way that they were just moving up and down the field, getting into the backfield, pressuring Juice Williams. I mean, they looked like two bookend defensive ends that could really strengthen and be the anchors of this Missouri defensive line this year. Your thoughts?
I'm going to say one word, and that word is pursuit. The angles for Chavis and Stryker, not only the angles, but the closing speed for a defensive end on a quarterback with the mobility of Juice Williams was absolutely ridiculous. Stryker had a minimum of 3 sacks. We looked up at the screen, he had 3 sacks at one point. I don't even know if he had another. As the boy will mention in the post-game podcast to be posted at a later time today, I'm sure. Talking about Stryker's pace for 36 sacks on the season, but
got nothing on this right
now. God, Chavis just coming across the opposite sides of the field, making plays. You know, Stryker getting upfield. You know, you go inside. Ziggy Hood was not dominant, but Ziggy Hood did what he had to do. And let's face it, the Missouri run defense was stout today.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
Last year, the question coming out of the Illinois game is the Missouri run defense really that bad? And Geno Blow proved it that bad, but you know, after the bye and once they got into conference play, they shorted up. The question this year is not the run defense, apparently, if you're, you know, in the very small sample size of one game, I should qualify, but run defense looked stout today. But with that, boy, let's get to the pass defense here, Ibe. You want to start us off?
The first thing that both RPT and I noticed is that William Moore was not playing back as a safety. He was in nickel coverage, mostly on whoever Illinois was running in as their slot receiver. And that really showed, you know, when Juice Williams was throwing the ball over the top to, you know, wide open receivers to, you know, fade routes to the back of the end zone where the defensive back doesn't even make a play on the ball. I mean, there are a number of blown coverages by Missouri's defensive backs. And just a number of just really awful plays by them. And, it did seem like Juice Williams had that good of a passing day. Missouri's secondary just had that bad of a day. And that's something they're really going to have to rectify when it comes to the Big 12.
And, you know, the defense today pretty much degenerated into the defense I generally have if I'm playing on Heisman in NCAA. That's basically what it boiled down to. Basically running, you know, the nickel formation exclusively, somehow finding a way to stop the run on a pretty much consistent basis out of the nickel formation, and somehow getting torched downfield with five defensive backs on the field. How it happens, I'm not exactly sure. I don't want to be too quick to come to, you know, just completely rip into any of the defensive backs. Del Howard, Justin Garrett, who I don't want to say I would love to rip into, but it would be extremely easy for me to rip into them, considering I have, ever since Pig Brown went down, that has been my one concern about this Missouri defense. And I don't want to rip into them because I'm not sure how much of it was the scheme and how much of it was blown coverage, but boy, you know, Garrett and Howard just getting torched over the top time and time again on the fade route, Juice Williams on the right side of the field. But again, it obviously files under bad. Whose fault it is, I'm not exactly sure. But the safeties, that becomes a concern. And then you go to the cornerbacks. Carl Geddes does what Carl Geddes does. He minimizes his mistakes. He minimizes yardage after catch. And he makes quarterbacks look the other way. But when Juice Williams looked the other way, he was looking at Tremaine Vaughns. He was looking at Casting Bridges and number 20, who we can only assume was Kevin Rutland because we're in the rafters and didn't have a program, and I don't know the roster that well yet to know what Kevin Rutland's doing. But if you're looking at those three guys from tonight's game, that's not a bad way to be looking if you're Juice Williams, and he proved that if you look at his line tonight, which I don't have in front of me because it's 118 and I'm on the middle of Interstate 70. But boy, the amount of times, at least, I think, you know, two of their first three touchdowns, great coverage, right with their man, but, you know, Uribe was saying they need to be doing wind sprints in practice. If they're doing their wind sprints, they need to be looking back for the ball about 15 yards into it, because a lot of those, they were right with the receiver, at least in the first half, just failed to make a play on the ball.
Yeah, I just going back to that, I'm expecting big things out of Casting Bridges this year. I really liked how he came along at the end of last year, but today was just, let's face it, he didn't have that good of a game. Now, the good news is that we got three games against SEMO, Nevada, and Buffalo, to get this all figured out. You know, like RPT was saying, you know, who knows how much of it was a defensive scheme. You know, if that's what it was, then, you know, let's go figure that out against, you know, these three teams. You know, Nevada actually would be a good team to do it against because they have a very good passing game, you know, using that the pistol formation. And, you know, if we can go out and stop Nevada, as odd as it sounds, I'll probably feel pretty good about our chances going into the Big 12. But first of all, we got to get past SEMO and hope that, you know, I know we're going to get past SEMO, but we got to hope that there aren't any, you know, more plays like that against Southeast Missouri State.
So we'll move inside to the heart of that defense. Only two linebackers tonight, and, you know, very little sighting of Luke Lambert, very little sighting of Andrew Gashker. You know, Steve Redman, I think, got hurt on one of the coverage units. But that brings us to what I think a lot of people are saying, the man of the game, the if you will, from Mizzoura.net, the Shakespeare player of the game. And that undoubtedly on defense has got to go to number 12, the kid out of Jasper, Texas. That's Sean Witherspoon. Your rebate.
There's no question. The two plays that he made, which, you know, I don't have the stats in front of me. He had the interception. Then he had the one, I guess it was ruled an interception, that really looked like he just took the ball away from the Illinois wide receiver and took it in for a touchdown. I mean, that's the kind of fire that Sean Witherspoon brings to this team. And he looked like the leader of this unit, you know, replacing, for, you know, Pig Brown from last year. He looked like the emotional and the physical leader of this unit. I mean, he took over that game. I'm really not all that hesitant to say it. It feels like he took over that game in the fourth quarter. You know, when he was jumping routes, he was making big plays, big stops, and, you know, that's what they need. They need someone like that, and it was Sean Witherspoon.
On a night where, to the naked eye at least, we don't have the stats in front of us, and for all I know, it could just jump off the page. On a night when, to the naked eye, William Moore was fairly inconspicuous, which can be a good thing, considering they had either he or Geddes on Regis Benn pretty much all night, Sean Witherspoon took over this game. Like you said, there's very little else to say about it. Sean Witherspoon decided at a certain point in this game that he refused to let... I don't want to say he refused to let Illinois back in the game because they were able to cut it fairly close, but Witherspoon refused to let it hinder this team. When plays needed to be made, Sean Witherspoon was the man to make those plays, and I'm, you know, stealing the same line kind of for I did for Carl Geddes, but Sean Witherspoon did what Sean Witherspoon does, and that is make plays, be the heart of this defense, get people around him fired up, and make sure that he's able to do a lot of jobs, whereas everybody else can take care of their business because they know Sean Witherspoon has got his. The other one to talk about is Brock Christopher, who very quietly had a good game, but I think the lasting image of this game for Brock Christopher will be that diving interception that he just barely missed.
Well, in all honesty, you got to remember Brock Christopher is a linebacker, and when you're trying to catch a ball that, you know, Juice Williams threw with all his might, you know, he was diving for it. I mean, let's imagine this is like, I don't know, to make a Kansas City Royals reference, this is like Mitch Meyer trying to catch a line rocket off the bat of Carlos Quinton on a full-out extension dive. I mean, it's not easy to do. And then you throw in a football and you don't have a baseball glove. I mean, that's even harder to do. And, you know, Brock Christopher, you know, if that's the lasting image of this game, then so be it. But Brock Christopher did have a good game. You know, he wasn't overly conspicuous out there. He just went out there and he did his thing and he did it well.
Yeah, you know your Uribe auction's always good for a Major League Baseball reference after a Missouri football game, but you know it's too hard. It's a little hard to fault Brock Christopher. I don't know how many times I've seen him 25 yards downfield in pass coverage, but you know I'll put Brock Christopher in the indifferent right now. You know, until I see the stats and until I get home and see the film, he could very well be moved up to good. I think he had a lot to do with helping shut down the Illinois running game today. Didn't seem, you know, outside of the options, which Stryker Shulak was absolutely picture perfect on options for most of the night. We forgot to mention that. The pursuit angles were absolutely fabulous. They had help from the outside. They were containing, moving guys inside. That was absolutely gorgeous, but I think Brock Christopher did have a lot to do with a lot of Illinois' running troubles. So as we move away from the players, the spotlight turns now to the coaching staff, and it starts up top, the Pink. Gary Pinkel-Uribe, your thoughts?
I can't complain about what Pinkel did today. I mean, his team scored 55 points, 52 points. It's 124 right now. The one thing that I hope Pinkel does emphasize in practice for the next few weeks is wrapping up on tackling. We saw a lot of plays where Missouri's defense was, you know, they're leading with their head. Like, you know, I believe it was Carl Geddes did on this two-point conversion. You know, they were just trying to hit with their shoulder pads, not hitting, you know, not wrapping up. And that's something that they're going to have to do. It didn't cost them the game, so there's nothing really, you know, massive about that. But, you know, they got to learn that you got to wrap up. And hopefully Pinkel will emphasize that in practice.
Yeah, and then it seemed like the defensive line was missing a lot of tackles. It wasn't a failure to wrap up. I mean, obviously they do need to wrap up Juice Williams, but, I mean, if you can wrap up Juice Williams, you're doing something that, you know, the one of the top five teams in the nation in Ohio State couldn't do. But then I think one big problem they had with wrapping up is that the Missouri secondary may have been reading the press clippings from the boy a little bit too much as he continues to talk about how hard-hitting this unit is. And, you know, if you're a Texas Tech Red Raider receiver, you know how hard-hitting the Missouri secondary is. Danny Amendola can speak to that. But it seemed, I counted at least three or four plays where somebody in the Missouri secondary, either if they were up and run support or if it was some kind of crossing route, thought they were going to lay a shoulder into the receiver and the receiver was just going to, you know, fall flat on his back. That didn't happen tonight, especially in the first half.
Yeah.
There were so many, you know, just shoulder charges that were supposed to be tackles that ended up in, you know, probably an extra 30 to 40 yards in total yardage, you know, just across the game for Illinois. It did seem to get remedied a little bit, but that it becomes a concern. It's not something we're going to freak out about. It's not something to harp on, but it is something that they had issues with early in the season last year and got better as the season went on. I mean, we can only hope that's going to happen now. You know, getting back to Pinkel, a win's a win. You know, pushed all the right buttons. I absolutely love the change of possession on the first play looking for Saunders. Not only that, called the play action down the right sideline.
The exact play that you called.
In real time, called it. Just you know, throw some props to myself here at 1:26 in the morning.
I can verify that. So.
Yeah. And then, you know, the only real beef I had with Pinkel is that on 4th and 1, about 5.5 minutes remaining in the game, Missouri, a little bit into Illinois territory. I don't have exact details.
Probably around the 40, I think.
Yeah, somewhere around the Illinois 40. You know, I absolutely agree with the call to go for it. You know, on 4th and 1, just try to put it away. But Pinkel has a 40-second play clock that he can start to run. You know, I understand it's the fastball offense, but this is coming off a stoppage of play, if I recall.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, they run 5 wide, and this is after Daniels' run. I think it was 3rd and 6, about a 5-yard QB draw. They come out in the same formation, and I think about 3 people in the stands next to us see Missouri come out in 5 wide, and every single person says, QB draw.
Yeah.
And what happens? QB draw. And I cannot help but think of 2006 in College Station against Texas A&M. Both the 4th down play, which is one of the ugliest options I've ever seen, with Chase being wrapped up and just shoveling the ball off to Marcus Woods. And then the fake field goal that never happened, so he could call timeout and then run fake field goal with Brad Ekwueu. Bad images there, but no, you know, it's a win. Pinkel, we'll throw him in the good. He did what he had to do. He, you know, they're managing expectations. They're coming out. He's got to keep them focused, especially not that they're going to be threatened too much over the next 3 weeks, but this is a team that you definitely have to keep in check. So now we turn it away from Pinkel and the coordinators, Christensen or Eberflus, whoever you want to start with, go for it.
I'll take Eberflus. I mean, he, like you were saying during the game, when the defense wasn't backing off, you know, it seemed like they were doing real well, but it seemed like when Missouri got up by 17, when they got up by 24, you know, Eberflus kind of took his foot off the gas a bit, and that's when they got burned. And, I mean, it's something that you know, it'll be interesting when we finally see the film to see exactly what the schemes were on defense. But something that I really wasn't all that pleased with was William Moore playing in that nickel slot defensive position. That's just me. I think that, nothing against Del Howard and Justin Garrett, but they need William Moore back there. And, you know, when you go up against the pass-happy offenses of the Big 12, you're going to need William Moore back there. And, I mean, everybody who watched a game of Missouri football last year knows how William Moore can change a game with an interception.
Absolutely, and I'm going to hop in here just, to give a little bit of a nod to my hometown Dallas Cowboys. William Moore is a lot like Darren Woodson in the way that not only is he outstanding around the line of scrimmage, but he can just be a ball hawk in the secondary. And, you know, the question becomes, how do you use William Moore? Because you don't want to stick him in the secondary and lose his playmaking ability in the run game around the line of scrimmage. But, you know, if you put him near the line of scrimmage, you take away his ability to go get the ball in the secondary. I mean, it's a win-win and it's a no-win at the exact same time. But I bring up the Woodson reference merely because William Moore, whenever he's utilized properly, has the ability to make everyone around him better. And anybody who's watched Roy Williams try to play safety for the Cowboys since Darren Woodson left knows that it's a case of a lost puppy just kind of wandering around trying to figure out what he wants to do until he finally sees somebody he can attack and then go back to being lost. I mean, we've harped on Del Howard and Justin Garrett. We're not going to get into that, but, you know, I do like William Moore in that nickelback position, just because of how stout he is in the run game. But here's my thing, is if Justin Garrett is one of the hardest hitters on this team, why not have him closer to the line of scrimmage? That way, you know, Moore's obviously quick enough, smart enough, he has the intangibles, he can come up and run support if he needs to, but also have him, you know, to where, you know, you don't have guys like Hudson or Judson or whichever Hudson it is this year for Illinois, you know, catching six balls down the right sideline every other play for Illinois. But outside of that, I was absolutely thrilled with Eberflus coming out, attacking. You know, Chase Daniel, if you've been reading all of the reports during the offseason and in camp, he's been talking about, how aggressive this defense has been, how they've been able to mix up coverages. You know, with all the defensive starters coming back, it's not like they're having to work into it. Yeah. You saw pretty much the full array of defense from Eberflus and company.
Yeah. I did like all the blitzes that he was throwing at Illinois a lot.
I don't think a lot of it was coaching. I think you look at it, I think it was a lot of blown assignments. And I think a lot of it was daring Juice Williams to beat them. And
exactly.
Juice Williams, on a lot of occasions, did beat them. But I'll put Eberflus in. I can't believe I'm saying this, as they give up 42 points and what seemed like 600 yards and 43 touchdowns to Juice Williams. He is on the very bottom edge of my good list, edging towards indifferent. And if you could break it up into Eberflus's run scheming and his passing scheming, I think the run defense obviously is in the good. Pass defense is obviously in the bad. And so it meets maybe somewhere in between.
Something I just want to add to going back to your discussion of William Moore is, you know, when he's playing back, you know, if you remember the play against Kansas State last year where Josh Freeman was scrambling, you know, the ball was on the 1 yard line, it was fourth and goal on the one, and he was scrambling, and William Moore came from about the center of the end zone, sprinted all the way over and hit Freeman and got him, you know, stopped him. K-State didn't score. I mean, that play when you were talking about that, that reminded me of some trucks about to go off the road. That play, you know, when you were talking about that, I was just reminded of that play. You know, why can't William Moore be both things? You know, he's one of the best safeties in the nation. Why can't you play him back in coverage, and then he's got the quickness to come up and stop the run if he has me?
And that becomes one of the great questions, but it's a great question to have when you've got a talent like William Moore to be moving around. So we'll wrap up our coaching good, bad, and indifferent. Move it to the offensive side of the ball. Dave Christensen, OCDC. What are your thoughts?
I like the offensive scheme today. You know, a lot of it I don't think was, you know, like with Chase when he was telegraphing his passes. I'm not sure how much of that was coaching. I liked how we did balance the run attack and the offense. When the run was working, it seemed like we tended to stick to it outside of a couple of possessions. Other than that, I don't have a whole lot other, you know, thoughts about the offense, except that, I mean, we scored 52 points. I don't see how anyone can think it was bad.
You know, I don't have, you know, too many in-depth thoughts here. Dave Christensen gets this unit to put up points. Dave Christensen continues to maximize the different skill sets he has just going across the formations. Dave Christensen continues to foster an offensive line that is very, very well suited to this offense. The line looked very fluid, very agile. They moved well. They were pulling well. They were picking up assignments. The zone blocking, like I've said, on the running plays was absolutely beautiful on most plays. There's not a whole lot to complain about. You know, it's a 52-point effort. You know, take away 14 for defense and special teams, thanks to Sean Weatherspoon and Jeremy Macklin deciding to leave their footprint all over the Edward Jones Dome. But Uribe, just, you know, we've gone through the players, gone through the coaches. Any final thoughts?
Maybe hit up the kicker and punter. Jeff Wolford, he had a good game. I think he had, what, a 50-yard field goal?
Somewhere around there, and then something to definitely get into, kickoffs.
Yeah. I wasn't, you know, overly disappointed with Jeff Wolford on kickoffs today. I thought he did a fine job. I mean, maybe it was just because the kick coverage was so good. His kicks were fine, and, you know, they neutralized Regis Ben on those kicks.
Yeah, and it seems Jeff Wolford, from the couple times we had to see him kick off last year whenever Adam Crossett was in the doghouse, it seemed like he's added 4 or 5 yards of distance.
Yeah.
So that's definitely something that I was concerned about coming into the season. It's nice to see. I don't want to say it's remedied yet. Again, you know, small sample size. And then we turned to Jake Harry, who, you know, obviously that's one of the big concerns for Missouri,
which is
a beautiful concern to have. That's one of your top concerns. But Jake Harry, nothing great, nothing awful.
Yeah. He had a few punts where, you know, he had the one where it rolled into the end zone and he looked like he hit it too hard. But, you know, you can't say his punting was bad today.
And it seemed like Missouri was winning the field position battle for most of the day.
Exactly, yep.
So big thumbs up to the special teams. Big thumbs up to the cheat code for 99 yards of kickoff return greatness, of electricity in the Edward Jones Dome.
Like the boy was saying after the game, I mean, I've been at Missouri for 2 years, and I take kickoff returns for granted. You know, before I came, Missouri didn't return a kick in, what, 34 years?
I don't remember the exact number.
34, 32. I mean, it's incredible how much Jeremy Macklin can change a game, and that's why they need him back and healthy for the Big 12, you know, when that conference play starts.
And every single time that Illinois was set to kick or punt, could you not just feel the energy level in the Edward Jones Dome kick up a notch or two?
Yeah. It's the same impact that, you know, Devin Hester has in the NFL. When he touches the ball, or when there's the chance that he's going to touch the ball, good things usually happen. Now, Jeremy Macklin's a better wide receiver than him, but I'm not going to get into that, because that's going to take me into a whole set of gripes about the Bears. I'm not even going to touch that, so you should probably cut me off before I get into that, Ross.
I think I'm going to go ahead and cut you off, just because, hey, this is college football's day.
Yeah.
This is it's a great day for Rock Him Nation. It's a great day for college football fans everywhere.
Not a good day for Virginia Tech.
Not a good day for Virginia Tech, but considering I called out Virginia Tech in the blog poll roundtable, I'll consider that as a good day for me.
Yeah.
So being a little selfish, but no, let's actually, while we have it, let's talk around the Big 12. We don't have the scores in front of us. We're just going to try to go from memory here.
Well, okay, let's see. Kansas State beat up on North Texas.
I think the first one I want to dive into is Texas A&M.
Yeah.
Mike Sherman coming out. I think it's the first time they've lost a home opener in maybe somewhere between 20 and 30 years at Kyle Field. The Aggies go down to Arkansas State. Uribe.
You know, it's not like the pieces. I can't believe they only scored, what, 14 points?
I think the final score was like 16-14, something in that range.
I'm sorry, but when you have Stephen McGee, you have Mike Goodson, and you have Javorski Lane, there is no excuse for scoring just 14 points against Arkansas State.
Yeah, somewhere, I don't even want to say somewhere, in Atlanta, Georgia, Dennis Franchione is laughing right now.
Dennis Franchione is rolling in money because he's getting paid now to coach.
One of the sweetest deals ever. But then we'll move up north for an interesting tidbit. Nebraska getting back on track. I don't want to dive into week one too much, considering you thought they were on pace. A lot of people thought they were on pace for a national championship after the win against Nevada in week one last year,
yeah.
Prompting the all-time great headline from AJ the Husker Hater: "Week One Champions," with about 14 exclamation points. But yeah, Joe Gans, 14 touchdown passes.
He's got to be going to New York right now. I mean, there's no question in my mind that Joe. I'm so sarcastic right now.
I'm sure they're printing the shirts in Lincoln as we speak.
Yeah, Joe. Like, I don't even remember who they were playing.
Western Michigan,
right?
Yep.
So you hung 49 on Western Michigan. Good for you. Wake me up when you can't drive a truck through your offensive line or defensive line like, you know, you could against USC. I mean, Nebraska still has a long way to go before they're going to regain credibility. I still think they're probably going to make a bowl this year. You know, it's not like they were going to lose this game at home, you know, with Bo Pelini's debut. But, you know, don't buy into any Nebraska hype just because they beat Western Michigan.
You know, I think the way I saw it, Nebraska was either going to come out of non-conference play either at 4-0 or they were going to come out at 2-2. I think what happened in the Western Michigan game was going to dictate what happened later on in the Virginia Tech game.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go ahead and say Nebraska is going to take Virginia Tech.
I totally agree. And just to go off topic a bit, Virginia Tech looks lost on offense.
The Virginia Tech offense is, I think the Virginia Tech offense this year would make last year's Nebraska defense look like it knows what it's doing.
Yeah.
And anybody who watched the Nebraska defense last year knows what a statement I just made right there. Elsewhere in the Big 12, really not much else to dig into. Just rattle off some results. OU just destroying Tennessee Chattanooga.
Chattanooga got
2 points. They're missing Terrell Owens, I think, a little bit. They could have used that explosiveness.
Texas Tech did give up 24 points to Eastern Washington.
Yep.
So, I mean, not to read into it too much because it is just the first week, but, you know, maybe all this Tech hype about this defense that supposedly was there was kind of unwarranted.
Just, you know, cautious optimism. If you read some of the reports, you know, you think Ruffin McNeil's the next coming of Will Muschamp and Buddy Ryan and all these guys. Elsewhere, I meant to check in on the score of Oklahoma State and Washington State, but that'll have to wait until I'm back by a computer.
Yeah.
Trying to think up north, Colorado doesn't play till tomorrow. Iowa State was earlier in the week.
We touched on K-State.
Kansas destroys Florida International. Down south, Baylor destroyed by Wake earlier in the week. That pretty much wraps
Texas,
it up around
Texas
the Big 12.
Beat, Florida Atlantic.
Yeah, beats Florida Atlantic.
Schnellenberger.
That is Schnellenberger, who decided to call Texas soft. I want to go back and see what happened in that game, and if Rusty Smith is the quarterback, I believe, for Florida Atlantic.
Yeah.
See if how Will Muschamp and company and Sergio Kendall and that entire unit took the whole soft remark.
The sideline mics were turned off for that game.
Either that, or somebody had a mic down there just from YouTube. But regardless. You know, pretty much outside of the A&M loss, you know, what you expect around the Big 12.
Yeah.
Missouri gets in a shootout. Kansas wins big. North Texas gets pounded by Kansas State. You know, Texas Tech, Oklahoma putting up points. But Uribe, unless you've got something else to add, it's 142 somewhere in the state of Missouri on I-70 West.
It's getting kind of foggy out, so we should probably get back to concentrating on driving. So, just another quick little shout-out to Alabama. They played a good game against Clemson. Of course, I didn't watch any of it. But.
And a shout-out to my father, the man who graduated Alabama. A big win for Saban and company over the Clemson Tigers. And if you are the Clemson Tigers, you're feeling like 2006 Missouri. Here we go again. So,
although if you do know how to pronounce Julio Jones' name, please post it in the comments because we have no clue.
I've heard it both ways. It's not that I just have no clue. It's that I've heard with authority I'm sorry to sound like Bill Walton. I know no one wants to hear that. It seems that I've heard it both ways. And Julio Jones, Julio Jones, Jay Jones. We're just going to put it that way. And I hate to say Jay Jones because it sounds like I'm saying Jerry Jones in a Martellus Bennett voice.
Oh, God.
For anybody that hasn't heard that phone call on draft day. But, yeah, just an interesting result. Saban and company taking care of business. John Parker Wilson apparently looking good. It's out of my realm of possibility, so I'm sure he's due for a four-interception night here in the next couple weeks. But, yeah, I'm sure that's got to be the big result out of college football on the day outside of Michigan going down to Utah, which a lot of people saw coming. But
Pitt losing to Bowling Green, Dave Wannstedt probably running his hand through his hair at least 25 times in that game.
25 times that game. Try 25 times in the, before kickoff.
Okay, before, yeah. And then, you know, during the game, whenever Bowling Green scored, 27 on him? I don't know. We were listening to some late night, pretty awful radio on the way back here, and someone just said about Dave Wannstedt that he is legitimately a loser. Like, he doesn't know how to win, and as a Bears fan, I can attest to that, so...
Hey, that's unfair. Wannstedt knows how to win. He just knows how to do it with as a coordinator for the Cowboys teams of the 90s. So let's not get into that too much. Before we start talking NFL, and yeah, that is my... That's not even a crack. That's just a going out from being hoarse. But yeah, the voice is cracking. It's 1:45. We're starting to get into NFL talk, and that's all things that really nobody wants to hear. No. So with that... Missouri football is back. Missouri football is 1-0, and the
battle of the undefeateds next.
Battle of the undefeateds, the show me showdown at Faurot Field. That's how I'm going to market it. It's 1:45 with Uribe Auction. I'm RPT from Rock M Nation. Signing off. Good night. / good morning.